You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, the one and only David Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good after an intro like that. The one and only. I mean, it's true theoretically, but yeah, no, I appreciate it.
We only speak in theoretical truths on the show anyway.
Nothing is
absolute. We're not Sith lords. Well, it's Mailbag Monday on a Tuesday, right? So we wanted to do this on Monday, but we're doing it for Tuesday just because we had a nice long conversation about Chris Bosh and everything that's going on with him and the lunch that Kendrick Perkins reported as true back in 2014. That was Monday's podcast. That was a good one, so go back and listen to that if you haven't gotten a chance to. But so we saved the mailbag questions for right now. So let's just get right into it. Dally from Staten Island, New York, where my cousins lived for a very long time. Basically laid out the whole situation on Chris Bosh, and that basically, with everything that's going on with Bosh, that there is the potential to be under his contract for 2 more years. So the question is, if the Heat can't get Bosh's contract off the books, can they still rebuild in spite of that? It's a good question. So we crunch the numbers, and if Bosh's deal is on the books for next season and everything kind of stays the way it is without any major moves, meaning not a Josh McRoberts trade, Goran Dragic is still on the team, etc., the team is looking at about $14 million in cap space. Not a lot. And that's with Deion Waiters and Willie Reed opting out next year. The Heat, that's not enough to make any major moves. You would basically have to trade, I think, you'd almost have to trade Josh McRoberts, and that's been a big if, not when sure. type deal that the Heat could do. They've been trying to reportedly trade him for like the last 2 years, right? I think at that point you really have to consider trading Goran Dragic and trying to attach McRoberts to that, just because his contract goes up to $17 million next season. It's about $15 million now, so you're going to pay him $2 million more next year. If you want any chance at rebuilding this thing, you're probably looking at trading a then 31-year-old Goran Dragic, who's making $17 million a year, which is a good value for him, but if you're rebuilding, you're probably going to move him.
Right.
Then there's one other option. You can stretch Chris Bosh, saving you about $15 million per season. Now, you can keep Dragic and McRoberts, stretch Bosh, and now have about $30 million in cap room. If you do that, you're paying, at that point, you're going to be paying Bosh $10 million every year for the next 5 years if you use the stretch provision on him, which is a lot of money still, but as the cap moves up, maybe not so much. It's way better to have maybe $10 million on the books against you for the next 5 years as opposed to $25 million, $26 million for the next two, where you can't build at all. So there's some options that they have.
Yeah. I have a question regarding the whole term rebuilding, and I honestly, I hear it, and I'm not sure I understand exactly what it means. What is it that Dally or you or anyone thinks about, you know, when it comes to rebuilding? Is it tearing down the team completely in the hope of rebuilding the team into a title contender? Is it rebuilding it towards playoff contention? Is it just overhauling all the dead weight on the roster, including Bosh's contract, maybe Dragic's, et cetera? And I don't know that I necessarily have an answer to that.
I think people see it as, can they get back to championship contention? That's what rebuilding means, because this team is rebuilt already. Like, the big three is gone.
Sure.
For better or worse, this team is rebuilt. So the rebuild is underway. And I think what people say can they build back to a champion? So can the Heat get back to the Eastern Conference Finals and the NBA Finals and become a challenger to the Cavaliers, even if Bosh's contract is anchoring the salary cap?
I mean, it's going to take
get rid of it.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot more than just moving his contract, I think, and that's, you know, arguably you've weighed your future to the development of young players. You have to hope that Whiteside can become more versatile as a scorer and maybe a little bit more efficient as a defender. You have to hope that Winslow becomes a better shooter and a playmaker. You have to hope that Richardson continues to develop along the same path that we saw last season as a perimeter shooter, et cetera, as a ball handler. Tyler Johnson needs to at least live up to part of that contract. You know, I'm loath to think that he's going to be worth the amount of money he's going to get paid in the years 3 and 4 of his 4-year deal. But we kind of need him to be in order to be considered a legitimate contender team. And then, yeah, you're right. You need to clear up some space in the hopes that maybe you can acquire a superstar or two.
I think they almost have to go the other way. I don't know that if you – even if you clear enough space to acquire Blake Griffin, right? Blake Griffin automatically makes this team very good. I think this it takes this team into the playoffs. And we're talking about a guy who's arguably a top five player in the NBA 2 years ago. Like he has the talent and ability and skill to take this team into playoff contention, especially with the roster that's already there. I think with Winslow and Whiteside, like there's Richardson, there's good players in there. But if fundamentally you need to try to rebuild a group, then and you still have Bosch's contract on the books, you need to basically understanding that you're operating at essentially a smaller cap than every other team in the NBA. You're operating at a cap that's either $10 to $25 million less than what every other team is working with. You have to find undervalued players or players on contracts that are of better value than maybe what their talent is. I mean, you look at Steph Curry is making $12 million this season for the Warriors. Like, that's the kind of thing that you need to go find. And I think the only way to do that is to draft players, is to get them on rookie scale contracts or to acquire players on rookie scale contracts and maybe not go just the quick fix free agent, because even if you do sign Blake Griffin, all of a sudden you have maybe $5 million left to fill out the rest of your roster. Like, all of a sudden you have zero depth, I think, and you the Cavaliers are going to be deeper than you regardless. So maybe you get to a point where you're like the Raptors and you can sort of compete, but you're not going to win.
I mean, you can hope that a player like let's look at this year's roster, right? That Derek Williams and James Johnson and Dion Waiters, if they perform to the best of their ability and we see significant growth, I mean, aren't those good value deals that could innately help build a team towards playoff contention? I mean, if Waiters becomes, let's say, an uber efficient version of himself, who can space the floor at a 35% clip from 3-point range, who can facilitate on offense, who chips in 15 and, seven assists per game with, a couple rebounds and steals per game. Isn't that great value and potentially not necessarily a centerpiece, but a building block towards a rebuild?
But if he does that this year, then you have to pay him, right? Cause he's going to opt out of his contract. So either way, if he becomes that, now you could, if he does that, you're paying $18 to $20 million a year for Dion Waiters now. You know what I mean? Like, if that's what he becomes this year, that's what he's
worth. But then doesn't he become then that superstar that you were going to go out and get anyway?
100%. Yeah, absolutely. But that's what you're spending your money on now. And is a team with Goran Dragic a great version, a all-star version of Dion Waiters, Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, Justice Winslow, Hassan Whiteside, is that a group that can contend for an NBA Finals? I don't know, man. Like, it that sounds to me like a really, really good group, but I don't know if it's better than Cleveland. It's certainly not better than Golden State. Like, I know you can't really think like that, but...
Yeah. No. It's a good point. I mean, look,
if the answer is Dion Waiters, I'm all in anyway. Like, if the answer is just, like, rebuild, why do we need to do that? We got Dion Waiters. I'm buying in.
I mean, look, those are top-heavy teams in that you assume Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and LeBron James are, three of the top 30 players in the league, I'd say. I mean, that seems about right. And you look at Golden State, and arguably, they built that team in a very strange way. Nobody expected Klay Thompson to be that kind of a player. Nobody expected Steph Curry and his bad ankles to be that kind of player. Draymond Green is an aberration at a point in time where you can use him as a versatile defender, passer and perimeter shooter, but nobody expected him to be that player. That's why he was drafted in the second round, So you hope that you get lucky on things like that. But look at that's a different situation. If you use more of the potential, rebuilding model for Miami, it's more closely aligned to what they did in Cleveland. And I think, even Kyrie Irving and even acquiring Kevin Love, those players don't matter if you don't have LeBron James, and you're not getting a LeBron James. You had a LeBron James for 4 years. So I don't know what's the next step as far as rebuilding is concerned. You've got a really good rim protector. You've got, a great passer and a great scorer in Dragic. And I think you hope that you can get a couple players here and there who might be able to boost you to that level. I mean, look.
I think you're right. You have to keep trying to just find guys. Like, you can't think about the Warriors or even the Cavaliers. You really have to just, all right, let's just keep signing the best guys we think we can get And hopefully, like you said, you get lucky with a Steph Curry or Klay Thompson type, Draymond Green type. I mean, arguably they did with Josh Richardson and Tyler Johnson and Whiteside, sure. Right? So sure. You just
got
to keep
adding
guys.
Four years of Josh Richardson at under $1 million per year. Who wouldn't take that in this league, knowing that he's, you know, a great perimeter defender or capable of being a great perimeter defender, you know, close to a 40% three-point shooter if he keeps that level up. We expect some kind of drop-off, but even if he's anywhere near that, I mean, that's still a great value for a guy getting paid less than $1 million a year.
It's going to take more stuff like that. More players that maybe not making less than $2 million a year, but like more players that are making a few million dollars less than maybe what their talent should
dictates.
That's what it's going to take. Just because, again, if this is with the caveat that Bosch is under contract or that you're still paying for Bosch's contract, you're operating in a smaller cap. Therefore, you need to be able to cut costs where you can. That's player salary, obviously, is the only place. You got to just hope you get guys on below-market deals. So maybe one of those guys is Serge Ibaka. Who knows? Because our next question comes from Brian Young. What would you guys think of an Ibaka-Whiteside front court?
Look, I've seen Ibaka a lot. In Oklahoma City, and you know, I was lucky enough to be there at Media Day in Orlando when he was introduced to the team and everything else. And I'm not optimistic that that front court could work. I think he's optimistic that he could be a better scorer than what we've seen in Oklahoma City. He's a floor spacer. He's capable of spacing the floor, but I'm not necessarily convinced that he's going to be as productive as he was a couple seasons ago. There's some concerns there that he may no longer be as healthy as he once was, that injuries are starting to take away from the overall efficiency
of
the player that we saw.
Or even as old as he says he is, right?
Right, but that's another concern, right? I think that's – honestly, I think there's a little bit of a racial bias there, and I think that's kind of ridiculous, you know, based on where he's from. But I think, you know, he's 27, so he's still obviously, I guess we have to include that caveat. Yeah. If that's actually his actual birthday, he just turned 27. It's hard to think of that considering he's been in the league for as long as he's been, and he's been as good as he has for the last few years. But, he's a good shot blocker. He's a good floor spacer. He was a good mid-range shooter. He still is when he gets that opportunity. The thing I don't like from him is that he's not necessarily a facilitator. He doesn't create his own offense. He's a catch and shoot guy. He's developed that into the point where he's more efficient overall, but I'm still scared of seeing both Whiteside and Ibaka, neither of whom are able to create their own shot really, and require an excellent ball handler in order to help them or somebody to get them the ball in just the right spot in order to maximize their offensive output. So I'm not high on that, and I think Ibaka is looking to become a star or establish himself as an all-star this season. You know, considering all of his success in Oklahoma City, he's never made the all-star team because the West has always been so deep at the forward position. But he's looking to do that this year in Orlando, and I think he wants to get paid a whole hell of a lot of money. So I guess, if he's able to sign with Miami, it's assuming Bosch's contract is off the books and we have the kind of money to throw at
him. And people, I think Brian is maybe looking at Ibaka as the replacement Bosch because, again, they're both stretch forwards who can shoot the three and defend. But you're right. Unlike Bosch, he can't facilitate. He can't create. Bosch is one of the – little known fact, Bosch has been one of the best isolation players in the NBA for the last 3 or 4 years. Just top 10 percentile-wise, like right up there with the best. Ibaka doesn't do that. Ibaka, he's a catch and shoot guy essentially, and that's not what Chris Bosch is. An isolation player, you can get him in the triple threat position at the elbow, and he can facilitate guys. I mean, you could build an offense around him from that position. You can't do that with Ibaka. I think you're right. You would end up overpaying for him regardless, which goes right into the face of what we just got done talking about, where you need to find guys maybe under at better value.
Right.
So, and my other concern with him is, I don't think he could play with the speed that Miami might want to play with. If you have Ibaka and Whiteside on the floor now, I think you're slowing down the game a little bit.
Good point.
He could space the floor, but again, like, he's not somebody that's going to move the ball like on his own. Like, he's going to – I don't know that if he fits with the pace and space. I think Miami might be better off going with a more athletic stretch four type, maybe even moving Winslow to the four at some point. Who knows? But that might be a better – okay. Let's take a quick second and just give a shout out to the Locked On Podcast Network. Locked On Heat is part of a larger network created by our boss, David Locke. He hosts Locked On NBA, which is a really good show. It does interviews with NBA types and NBA insiders. So go check that show out, Locked On NBA. Locked On Fantasy Basketball with our guy, Josh Lloyd, does a tremendous job over there. Another daily podcast. That's the best thing about this network. All the shows are daily. So if you're big into Locked On Fantasy Basketball, Locked On Basketball is your place. Locked On Fantasy Football, same thing. Fantasy Football, if you're into that, it's another great show. Locked On NFL. And, of course, if you're a Heat fan, then Locked On Miami Dolphins is another great show for you. Get your Dolphins news every day. So, and make sure to subscribe to Locked On Heat and leave us a rating or review on iTunes. We did a really good job last week of driving some more ratings and stuff. We asked to get up to 30 reviews. We got up to, I think we're a little bit more than 30 five-star reviews now, which is huge. And people even wrote in some really, really nice things in the comments section on iTunes. So we really appreciate that. Keep leaving us the five-star ratings. It really helps us and our ranking on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Hey, we bring you the podcast for free every day. At least you could do is just give us a five-star rating. It takes 17 seconds. Absolutely. I timed it.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
All right. Next question from Chris Leach. If Briante Weber were to make the roster, do you think Luke Babbitt could be cut, or do you think it's somebody else that's more likely to get cut if that's the scenario?
Wow.
I think Luke Babbitt originally probably looked like the odd man out. It looked like that he just like kind of acquired him just because he was available to fill up their roster. I think from everything that we're hearing from training camp and it sounds like Babbitt might have a role to play. And I think you've been getting much higher on Babbitt lately, right?
I mean, they kind of were working him in the first team offense there. And I think when you look around, unless you see a major spurt from Winslow and others, as far as perimeter shooting is concerned, Babbitt has a unique skill there that could certainly help the floor. And I think we've seen it in the past that Spoelstra is willing to keep guys around that have an elite level contribution they can make, especially as shooters. And I think that's his skill set right now. And I think he was productive in some games with New Orleans last season. When they were marred by injury, they needed somebody to come on the floor and contribute, and Babbitt filled that role pretty well. And I think his defense is certainly a problem, but hopefully I think a team that's built around teaching that kind of defense, like Miami is and has been over the past, can maximize that side of the ball for him. And I think he can grow to be a serviceable role player rather than the kind of bench warmer that he has been throughout his career.
Yeah, I think you and I are both come to terms. So Briante Weber is probably not making this team. I mean, the Beno Udrih signing probably signified that more than anything, I think. But don't rule out, if the team were to keep Briante Weber, it could be a James Johnson that ends up getting let go. I think James Johnson has a lot of potential to end up being the guy that plays like the fewest minutes that's not named Udonis Haslem on this team this season.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of his inconsistencies and if the team really decides that they want to move forward with more guards and less front court players, Derek Williams is probably the better version of James Johnson at this point. I think you're right about Luke Babbitt filling a need as a floor spacer and a three-point shooter. Right. Josh McRoberts isn't going anywhere anytime soon, for better or worse. It just doesn't seem like the Heat could get to move that contract anywhere. But so maybe James Johnson. But ultimately, I think Briante Weber ends up in the D League. But
I would say that if you do keep Weber, I wouldn't be at all surprised if they waive Udrih, to be honest with you. I think we don't know enough about the deal. But I mean, if you're going to keep one guard already in a glutted backcourt, why keep another one who's towards the tail end of his career, who's been a journeyman, et cetera? I mean, obviously, he's capable of being productive. We saw really good minutes from him last year, and I think that he like what he brings as a veteran and a commanding presence or something like that. But maybe they'd rather, kind of acquire him as a potential coach, a future coach.
You wave him and make him assistant coach. I'm sure that would just get another big eye roll from the rest of the NBA, too.
Right.
All right, last question. This is from Daniel 2222-3333 on Twitter.
Nice.
I guess 2222-3333-1 wasn't available.
Four twos, four threes.
Four twos and four threes. One Daniel. At its peak, is this Heat at its peak, was the Big Three Heat team the best team in the 21st century so far? He mentions the 2000 Lakers, 2014 Spurs, the 2015 Golden State Warriors. I'd throw in a couple other teams. I think this last year's Cavaliers team was really, really good.
Really?
I think that 2012 Thunder team was really good. That the Heat beat. I probably wouldn't put them in that conversation, but I thought they were really good. I don't know. I'm trying to think other teams that should be involved there. I mean, I think you got the Lakers covered with the 2000
team. Yeah, I mean, maybe different iterations of the Spurs. I mean, I'm sure there's somebody.
Spurs. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's somebody in Michigan right now who's pissed off that we haven't included the grit and grind Detroit Pistons. But, I mean, I don't think that they're – I mean, I think they were a really good team.
The Dwight Howard Magic team, I mean –
they were potent, but I don't know. I don't know that they were necessarily overpowering. Maybe the 2008 Celts. I mean, they were.
Oh yeah,
three Hall of Famers there. I mean, really good. Great defense. Yeah, really great scoring ability. And a young Rajon Rondo and a young Kendrick Perkins. So I mean, there was a pretty good squad overall.
The lunch was for Kendrick Perkins.
Right. I mean, I think that certainly the Heat should be included among those best teams, and I think we tend to overlook that now. Especially with the ugly breakup of the Big Three, you know, you tend to gloss over that era. But there were so much scrutiny there. They were the first real mega team to be birthed at a time when social media was already fairly established and everybody could communicate and rip a team apart and dissect everything. You know, the 24-hour news cycle and everything else. So it was. For them to deal with the kind of scrutiny that they did, and I think for them to perform at such a high level. And you know, I think part of it is, unfortunately, they never really achieved the kind of regular season success that people expected them to, you know, partly because there was just getting used to each other in 2010 and 11, you know, the strike, the lockout, shortened season the following year. But that third year.
Yeah.
When they went 66-16 and won 27 games in a row. I mean, I think you can argue that they're one of the best teams of all time, I think.
I think that team peaked during that 20. I think that 27 game win streak, if you put that Heat team in the middle of that 27 game win streak against any of those teams, they could have beat any of them.
Absolutely.
I think that the Big Three had two peaks, and it was the 27 game win streak and then the 2013 finals against the Spurs. I think they raised their game to a level they had never played before in those NBA finals. And you put those squads up against anybody. I think you could put them against Shaq and Kobe in the 2000 Lakers. I think they could have beat that team. I think they could have beaten the 73-win Warriors from last year. They could have certainly beat the Cavaliers from last year, which we should put in the conversation anyway, just because they actually beat the 15 Warriors.
It's a good point.
So
I mean, it's tough to say. I mean, you know, Shaquille O'Neal in 2000 was at such a high level.
It would be crazy. Such an unstoppable force. It would be like the struggles that the Heat had with Roy Hibbert times like a billion.
Yeah, I mean, who's going to guard him? Like, right. If you put Chris Bosh in there, like, fine. He couldn't guard Chris Bosh because no one had ever expected a center like Bosh to play in 2000. But, I mean, he couldn't have guarded Bosh, but Bosh certainly couldn't have guarded him. So what are you going to do, just let Shaq go for 100 points a game? I mean, that's basically what
Those good Heat teams did a really good job with help defense and stuff. And I think with maybe if – I mean, it's hard because, like, those 2000-era NBA – wasn't like what it's been the last few years, where the Heat would have had the advantage of 15 more years of experience and knowledge of defense, like Thibodeauian defensive schemes with like weak side help and strong side help and everything like that. But you probably end up like just throwing that kind of defense, that on the string defense that the Heat ran at its
peak. Pressuring Derek Fisher the second he crosses the half court line. I mean,
forcing a bunch of turnovers. Like, yeah, I think. I mean, you put that level LeBron on Kobe, and that would have been a great, you know, that would have been a great matchup. I don't know. Yeah, I think they have to be up there. I think that I don't know if I put them against last year's Warriors, but you know what? No, they could have beaten last year's Warriors. I think Bosh could have taken Draymond Green out, and we saw that in the finals. When you get him out,
right,
you really disrupt a lot of things that the Warriors wanted to do. And That was when Dwayne Wade was also really good at defense. Like he was more
committed
to defense.
Committed to playing defense, I think. Yeah,
committed. And I thought that team defensively, like, you could have put Shane Battier on Harrison Barnes.
Yeah, for sure.
LeBron could have taken out, I mean, anybody, like he did last, like we saw in the finals. You take that, like the 2015 finals, LeBron James was only better in 2013.
Right. They would have had to play their death lineup all the time because Bogut would have been a non-factor there. I think Bosch could have limited him, and I think he couldn't have stopped Bosch on the perimeter. So you're going to have wide open looks for CB all the time. I mean, it's an interesting conversation. And then, yeah, I think our bench was probably more than capable of withstanding Golden State's depth. I think, you know, you got Ray Allen up there, you got Rashard Lewis, Juwan Howard, I think, yeah, he was still a factor at that point. Not much, maybe. Udonis could have gone in there and thrown a couple elbows if necessary. Yeah, I mean, we tend to overlook how good that team was, you know. And, you know, that maybe our weakest link was the greatest point guard in Heat history, Mario Chalmers, you know.
Oh, Mario Chalmers would have been clutch.
Sure.
Mario Chalmers on Steph Curry, that would have been great.
How many mistakes would Mario have made against Steph?
It wouldn't have been enough to outweigh his overall contribution. There's only one Mario Chalmers.
We're a little biased here, though.
I think so. I think Mario would have seen Curry launching threes from 33 feet out, and he'd be like, I could do that.
I could do that, too. You think 33, I'll take you from 34, boy.
Inbound the ball, I'll shoot it.
Yeah, I'm sure the Heat fans would have loved that.
Yep. All right, well, I think that's all we got. Those are all our questions. Those were good questions. I liked all of them.
Yeah, there were certainly a good scope of information there, and you know, keep them coming. We always want to hear from you, even if we don't necessarily get to them every Monday as much as we'd like to. We still want to hear from you, and we'll keep those questions on the shelf in the hopes that we can address them in a future podcast. So we definitely always want to hear from you. Contact us via Twitter. Shoot us up an email. We always want to hear from our fans. And as always, as Wes mentioned, please leave a review in iTunes and let us know what you think of the show.
Couldn't say better myself. We're on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining me, David.
Hey, Wes.
Catch you next time.